We're still working through some information as far as 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and the Lord's Supper. We've gotten down to verse 27. That's where I want to read. It is one of the better known passages in the Bible, especially when you look at the 11th chapter of 1 Corinthians. And here Paul talks about some abuses of the supper. In that 27th verse, he says, "Wherefore, whosoever shall eat the bread and drink the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord." As you look at that word "wherefore," in some translations it may be translated "therefore," that does refer back to the previous verse, verse 26. When you think about the communion, as we've discussed, it is a reminder of Jesus' death, burial. Some would also associate the Lord's resurrection. That's less important than the other two as far as the actual act of communion. But Paul's telling us in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 27 that this is an act that should be approached in a way which is reverent. This is something which is serious. This is something that you really need to pay close attention to. Now, having said that, would we want to draw the conclusion that the Lord's Supper is an act where you are very serious about that, but when it comes to other stuff, you just kind of slough off and that's not too important? When it's time to hear the preacher, you just take a nap. And when it's time to sing, you just keep the book and close and just kind of mentally go off somewhere and don't pay attention to the prayers? No, we don't do those things. Every act of worship should be treated with the same degree of seriousness. Reverence should be through the entire service. So even though the Lord's Supper is highlighted in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 27, the right attitude is simply not limited to that. It is possible to worship in an incorrect way. You have here a wrong attitude. Paul's talking about an unworthy manner. And notice that he says, who's doing that? As you look at 1 Corinthians 11, 27, the first part of the verse, how's it begin? He says, "Wherefore, whoever, whomsoever, whoever." That tells you that the person might be a younger Christian, person could be an older Christian, the person might know a little, person might know a lot, the person might be rich, poor, the individual might be young, old, it really doesn't matter. Anybody that is not focused on the Lord's Supper, anybody who is partaking of it in an unworthy way is guilty of sin. So every single person has to partake of the communion and by extension every other act of worship in a reverent and in a humble manner. Now this is where people sometimes have some issues. King James has been around for a long time. Some people still use that translation. It sent a lot of people to heaven. But if you look at the King James translation, it's not unworthy. Change that a little bit. The King James translates that how? It's not unworthy. It is unworthily. And that has really messed some people up. As you look at the word, which is translated in some manuscripts in verse 29 as well, it means careless, partaking of the supper in an improper manner. So a lot of people, as they look at that particular word, they look at their life over the past week. You know, you don't know exactly what's going through a person's mind when they partake of the Lord's Supper, but you do sometimes get the impression that people, as they come to worship, they say this part of the worship, in their mind at least, is really serious. This is something that God pays extra close attention to. Therefore, I'm going to scrutinize my life and see if there's some sin, or maybe there are multiple sins in my life that in their mind make them unworthy of the Lord's Supper. And that's how they see it versus the way that it is partaken of. So Paul, as you look at 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 27, he's actually talking about how the supper is eaten versus how the Corinthians and other Christians live during the week. If you don't make that distinction, you come away with a completely erroneous point, and that's not what God wants you to get from the text. One source said, "Unworthy does not denote a moral quality, but an attitude determined by the gospel." In fact, when you go back and you look at that word, which is translated unworthy, it refers to a balancing of weights, and so means of unequal weight or improperly balanced. In other words, it's saying that the attitude is not in line, the attitude does not balance out with the act. Can you think of some times where that's true? The attitude of a person is not in line with the act. Kim?
Well, I don't know if this is right or not, but when we're about to receive the Lord's Supper and we've got it on our mind what we're going to eat for lunch, as soon as we get out the doors, when we've got our mind on that instead of the Lord's Supper, that's unworthy.
Yeah, it is. The attitude is not in line with the act. You should be focusing on God and all the things that go with worship, but there are some people who would be focusing on what they're going to do for the rest of the afternoon or thinking about and making lunch plans. What if a police officer stopped you? You're 4 miles over the speed limit. What would you expect as far as You've committed the act. You're 4 miles over the speed limit. What would you expect as far as the attitude of the officer in that set of circumstances? How would you be treated?
I think they would say, did you realize you were going a little over?
Yeah. What if he goes up to the car, you got the window rolled down, and he yanks you out of the car? I mean, he just pulls you right through the window, slams you to the ground, and then steps on your neck and pulls his gun out and puts it in your back.
It's a bit excessive.
Yeah, I'd say it's a lot excessive, right? The act and the attitude don't correspond, right?
No.
So we even when the use of force is discussed, talk about proportional force. You know, if somebody raises a finger at you, you can't shoot them. The act has to correspond with the attitude. And that's what we're talking about here as we think about worship. The acts that we're doing need to correspond with our attitude, and that's not always how it works, but it's been a problem for a long time. Let's see what else I want to give you here. If we had to be worthy to partake of the Lord's Supper, would any of us ever partake of the supper? No. There's no way. We can be as good as we can possibly be. We can strive as hard as we possibly can, and we're never going to be worthy. James said it a long time ago in chapter 3 and verse 2 that in many things we all stumble. So sin is a problem for each one of us. Luke 17:10, even if we do all the things that we are commanded to do, we are still unprofitable servants. We can, even though none of us will ever be worthy, we can partake of the Lord's Supper in a worthy manner. If and when we do that, God is pleased. A little bit more here. Also, if we refuse to eat the Lord's Supper because we don't feel good about our Christian life, you violate the command that we have back there in verse 24. Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me. Now, could the Lord have said, do this in remembrance of me if you're worthy?
He could have.
Could he have said, do this in remembrance of me if you feel worthy? Maybe you're not, but as long as you feel worthy, then you do this in remembrance of me. He could have done that too. But he didn't do either one of those things. He said, you do this in remembrance of me. You're not worthy. You're never going to be worthy. You shouldn't feel worthy, but I make you worthy. Through me, you are worthy. Therefore, you have the Lord's Supper. Tim, back to you.
The Lord doesn't expect us to not take the supper because we feel unworthy. He expects us to make ourselves worthy, try to live the way
Sure. We
should, so that we're acceptable to him when we do take it.
Absolutely. And that, I think, can be tied in with the focus that we have. We've been trying to live the Christian life. We can be mindful of our imperfections, but as we take of the Lord's Supper, as we partake of it, we are grateful that we do have that option. Okay.
It's a good time to remember that when we do sin, that Jesus' blood is continually washing.
At least that's
what I remember.
Yeah. So. That can be helpful as far as having the right attitude towards that. When we sing songs, we might have some songs that lead up to that. Typically, we have a song before the communion. That's not a biblical requirement, but that can be a good thing. We, in some of those hymns, have words that talk about the forgiveness, the power of the blood, being freed from every sin. And if we believe the words that we're singing, that should help us. And I think sometimes, though, people kind of get disconnected from the words of the song that they're singing, and then we move right into the Lord's Supper, and they're still in that I'm unworthy, and therefore I'm not going to have the Lord's Supper. If someone has those feelings, and they are sort of in the mindset of, I'm not going to partake today because of the Lord's Supper, because I've done some bad stuff, I feel unworthy, is 2 minutes before the Lord's Supper handed out really the right time to deal with that?
No.
When should that be addressed?
Long before.
Yeah. You could do that on the way to services. You could do that before, you know, as soon as you get out of bed. You could do that the night before, hopefully when you recognize the problem. But deal with that before we come to worship. And the same thing should be true for congregational singing. We might have some things in our mind. Maybe there's a job situation that's taking place. Maybe we're dealing with children and that's a problem. Or there is some other stress in our life. Try to put those things in the right spot mentally before we come to worship. The same thing is true when it comes to praying. What about giving? Can we be unworthy in our giving?
Sure.
Yeah. And there are different ways to do that, maybe what we're thinking about, maybe our attitude, and we want to make sure that we are always headed in the right direction. Anything that you want to add or ask before I say a little bit more?
Are there any translations that do not have an unworthy manner?
I have not checked several lately, Betty. But I do think that mainly you're going to find either unworthy or unworthily. There may be some others that differ greatly from one of those two renderings, but I think most will choose one of those two. Tim?
We had a member, I won't mention any names because somebody may possibly know him. He is since deceased, but he had his own business and he made a lot of money. And he gave a pretty good amount of money each week. But the elders up at Garden City made a decision that he didn't like. So he decided to withhold all his giving. Mm-hmm. He wasn't withholding that from the elders. He was withholding that from God. And that wasn't right. I mean, he should have talked to the elders about what he didn't like, but he shouldn't have quit giving like the Bible says to.
Yeah. There have been people who have done that. Sometimes they didn't like a preacher, and there were maybe some people who banded together if there wasn't one large giver. There have been congregations where there was one large contributor, and that person pretty much helped the congregation make the budget. And it may not be that they didn't like the preacher. They didn't like what the elders were doing with funds. They didn't like some missionary that was being supported. They didn't like the color of the pews that were going to be changed. Whatever it was, could be anything. But they did take that stance, and it's, I'm not an elder, so I can't change that, but I can control to some degree the direction of the congregation if I withhold the funds. It's pretty much, I'm going to lock things up, and at some point you're going to have to come to me and acquiesce. You're going to have to come to me and say, okay, let's play ball, and once you do what I want you to do, then the financial faucet is going to be turned back on. And you're exactly right. People, you know, we think about kids that pout sometimes. That's usually not something that parents really like. It's, you know, you get over that. That's a problem that you're just going to have to resolve. But adults can do and sometimes have done the very same thing. And, I mean, that makes the worship unworthy. And even though that's just one part of it, here we're focused on the Lord's Supper. But it can affect any part of the Lord's Supper, any part of the worship, including the Lord's Supper. And you come off at the same place every single time. But that is a great illustration, unfortunately, that's happened in a lot of places. Anybody else? Dolores?
In answer to Betty's question about the different versions, and this one, the easy read, is it's a version, not a paraphrase. I don't know if you can take it, you know, as gospel, but it says, if you eat the bread or drink the cup of the Lord in a way that does not fit its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the same.
Yeah, trying to, again, take us back to remember what it is, remember who did this for us, and you know, the attitude and the action. Remember the police illustration. Those two things correspond, and if you're not balancing those two out, equalizing those things, you have a problem. Anybody else? Let's talk about the present tense for a little bit. You have the verbs here, eat and drink, and this really surprises me as far as some commentators. I don't know why. I mean, these guys can see this as well as I can or anybody else, but those are expressed with the present tense. You would think that if you have the present tense describing ongoing action, especially with the Lord's Supper, eat, present tense, ongoing action, drink, ongoing action, it would be inconceivable that somebody would say, well, it's fine to have it once a year, or it would be fine to have it once a quarter or twice a year, once a month, whatever the frequency is. That would seem to almost demand that you do that on a regular basis, Sunday after Sunday. I think you also have a great lesson here, stepping aside from that, but making this point. If you know what the unworthy is, and that is you're not focusing on Christ, you're not thinking about the Lord's Supper, you're not concentrating on the worship, and then you add to that what he says here about the eating and drinking present tense. When you put those two pieces of information together, what's that tell you? Okay, let's again kind of see our A and B points so we can come down to C. All right, doing this in an unworthy manner is bad. You don't want to do this. All right, eating and drinking in an unworthy manner is wrong. Present tense. You put those two pieces of information together, what's that tell you?
We need perpetual worthy.
Yes. Paul's really dealing with a perpetual issue here. It would be Sunday after Sunday. These people are coming together, they're having the Lord's Supper, and they're blowing it every single Sunday. Everybody blow it from time to time? I mean, with the kids and with the job, church, you can come to services and, you know, maybe your big toe hurts, okay? You damaged your toe. And it's really tough to concentrate in worship. You think God understands that?
Yes.
All right. You're having some kind of attack. I'll tell you, I've had a few kidney stones over the years, and it is tough to come and worship if you have a kidney stone moving through you. So if I come and I'm preoccupied with stone pain, do you think that my worship is unworthy that day? I kind of doubt it. God seems to be sympathetic to that. But if here is a person who comes to worship, and they are perpetually, they are continuously, on a regular basis, their head is out in the clouds, they're always focused on other stuff, their heart is not really in it, then that's really what we're dealing with, as we see here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And God says, it's kind of like, you know, a job. You know, you can push some things and push some things, and then one day, the hammer kind of falls, the axe finally falls, and God says, enough. Anything that you want to add or ask on that? Tim, back to you.
Say you got your kids on cue with you, and they're acting up a little bit, which they do. That's what kids do. And you're distracted. And so because you're distracted, later on you feel guilty because you were distracted. Well, God is the God of power. He's the God of omnipotence, but he's also the God of love and the God of graciousness. And if you ask him to forgive you for your indiscretions, he will. And we need to understand that.
Using the illustration that you did, if you have unruly kids or grandkids, could be your own, or could be somebody else's, maybe you're trying to help somebody who's sick, who's creating the problem there? Is it you or somebody else? It's the children. It's not really you. You were put in that position. You're doing the best that you can, but, you know, trying to concentrate on whatever act of worship, you know, while grabbing this one and pulling this one and, you know, getting the other one off the floor, that's a challenge. So you're doing the very best that you can, and that just doesn't fit what Paul is describing as a habitual offender. When you look at the police, they do the same kind of thing. You know, if they pull somebody over for speeding, you know, okay, hey, you know, you're 6 miles over the speed limit, your record is clean, you know, we can go ahead and write you a warning. But what happens if you're the cop out there and you've seen this guy 17 times in the last 10 days?
No mercy.
It's not going to be much mercy because you are a habitual offender. And Paul says you don't want to be in that category because God's going to pay attention to you and it's not going to be a good thing. Remember what we've seen in this chapter. As you back up a little bit, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 17, Paul says, your assemblies are not for the better, your assemblies are for the worse. That's a pretty good clue as far as what was taking place at Corinth. As you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 18, he says there is division, there is strife, there's a lack of unity in the assemblies. As you look at verse 21, which we've already talked about, he said the people were not waiting one for another. Can you imagine an attitude where you're not willing to wait for fellow saints? You've brought food, and if you're not waiting for people, what do you think is going to be going through your mind? You've got food. You know you're not going to wait for folks. So what are you thinking about, do you think?
Yourself.
Well, I think that would be a good starting point, but what else?
Okay.
Yes. Anything else? Well, here's kind of what would be going through my mind. I wonder when the poor are going to show up. Wonder what time we've got to start eating before they come and start getting into the food. Wonder what my rich buddies bought and brought. So you can see that they were really focused on food. They were focused on the physical, just like we can be today, instead of the spiritual, and they were not thinking about Christ and the sacrifice. Therefore, when you get down a little later in the chapter, verses 29 and 30, Paul says you deserve punishment. Anything that you might want to discuss before we see a little bit more? Okay. Let's see what we've got next today. When people come for worship, but they think about other things, as we said before, that is not a good thing. Are there some things that can distract us when it comes to worship? What happens if you've got a song leader that sings too slowly? Can you be distracted by that?
You can.
You can? Can you be distracted by a song leader who sings too fast? How about one who blasts you out?
Yeah.
We've had that sometimes. How about the one who sings too soft? Can preachers do some things that annoy you? Oh, he always tugs at his ear. Man, that is the most annoying habit. So preachers can develop some annoying habits, and people can do things where they get distracted. And that's tough. But still, God says try to stay focused on worship. Whatever happens, some people are distracted by crying babies. There are some preachers that is a real problem for them. Other people would say, I just couldn't concentrate on worship because we got, the two-year-old back there, or got the infant, and, there were some sounds there that distracted me. Other people are distracted by people that are moving around in the pulpit area, or maybe not the pulpit area, but the pews. If that's a problem for you, are there some things that you can do?
Move forward.
Yeah. That is one of the things. I mean, people sometimes can't for health reasons, but if there are problems in the back, then consider moving forward and leaving those things back there. And hopefully those issues can be resolved. But move to a spot where you can free yourself from distractions.
Sometimes you can't do that.
That's true.
The building could be,
this is true,
pretty much full, and the service already started, and someone comes in and sits down and anything gets in front of you. So at that point, you have to almost physically make yourself block as much of it out as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And concentrate on it.
Yeah.
And if it's children, and you know the family, you can offer to help, not during that situation, but before worship. Say, if you need any help today with the children, please let me know. Or if I hear, would you like me to come and take one of them, or something?
Yeah. If those things don't work, can you dump it into Bob's lap?
Sure.
Yeah, Bob's like, hey, I didn't expect that. But can you dump that into the lap of an elder? Yes. And would that be appropriate? I mean, if you're coming to a place where there is something on a regular basis that is causing you difficulty in worshiping, and you can't fix it in some easy way, like Betty said, would you think that's probably going to affect some of the people too?
Yes.
It is. So that's probably the time to go and see an elder and say, hey, this is causing me an issue. Is there possibly something that the elders can do in this set of circumstances? Betty? Bonnie.
I look at it at a totally different angle. I wish so much that we had a crying baby in this church right now.
Yeah.
Kidding.
I tell every mama when she's had a new baby, don't worry about that crying baby. It's music to my ears. Mm-hmm. It means we got another little one coming up.
Yeah, you've got another generation that's in the wings. That's always a good thing, because you do have some younger mothers sometimes. They're very sensitive to that. They say, we don't want to disturb people. I find it difficult. You'll hear that sometimes from young moms. They'll say, it's very difficult for me to concentrate on worship. Hey, we understand. A lot of us have been there. And that is not a problem. We do have a cry room. If that's something that you want to do, we can get you some help if you have multiple children, but we want to make this as easy for you as possible. And we do appreciate your consideration. So it's kind of a group effort when it comes to sometimes distractions, but we do want to, at the end of the day, be as focused on God and worship as possible. Brandon, can you hold on to the cup for just a second? Okay. Remember when the Jews worshipped on what day? What was their big day?
Saturday.
All right. What was Friday for them? Preparation day. Why was it called Preparation Day? Sure. Friday's going to be the day that we get everything together, and that way when Saturday comes, we don't have to work, and everything is going to be laid out, and everything's going to flow smoothly. At least that was how it was supposed to work. Can we profit from that?
Yes.
If we're going to free ourselves from distractions, try to get stuff done on Friday or Saturday. That way, when we get things for Sunday, lunch plans, could we work them out in advance before Sunday? Sure. We could even do that a week in advance, maybe a month in advance. When this Sunday comes, whether that's next week or a couple weeks, let's do this for lunch. Come over to our house. We're going to go to your house, or we'll find some restaurant to go to. Can we work those things out after lunch? Yes. Somebody says, what are you going to do for lunch? Let's talk about it after services. We're just going to focus on God right now, and then we can deal with the stomach afterwards. All right, Brian, to you.
I think for me, I'm often distracted by what I see. So closing my eyes sometimes are helpful. If I get in a prayer, I have to close my eyes because I'm less likely to be distracted by something visually that way.
Yeah, there are some techniques that people can use. Teresa and I were calling the other night with some people as far as women delivering babies, that sometimes they will focus on a focus point. There are different techniques that, okay, I'm just going to kind of stare at that spot. So People can use different methods sometimes to stay focused. People, when they sing, they may want to be looking at the words in the book because that helps them. But find a technique which helps you maximize your focus on God and use it, because that will be more pleasing to God. Anybody else? Dolores?
One obvious thing, too, is to pray about it.
Yes.
Even before you get there, so that you have this connection and you know, and like you said, there are ways and techniques to put the mind over matter, but actually praying to God before you get here and saying, I know there's going to be distractions, just help me to focus on you.
People, you know, I don't know what everybody does as they're coming to worship, but I do know that some people listen to music. There are also some people who don't listen to music. They want to sort of center their minds, and to have something, even any kind of religious music might be distracting. So they just kind of want to try to clear the mind. There are the people, they listen to some form of religious music. And then there's some people who will listen to something that is not religious. They will listen to something that they might listen to, you know, Monday through Saturday. You know, they'll kind of pick their favorite era of a band. And that way, you know, I'm going to listen to this. I'm going to kind of get it out of my head. You know, I've listened to it. It's kind of like eating. I filled my stomach, so now I'm ready to go on to other stuff. And they may use that technique. But find what works for you to kind of get you in the right frame of mind for when it comes to worship. And part of that can be the drive here, especially if it is a lengthy drive. Bonnie?
You know, years ago when Mark Reynolds was here, and he was talking to us about India, and he was telling us how their Sunday morning goes in their house, and he wants it quiet in the house. No TV going, no radio going, and that kind of thing. And Gary and I started doing that after Mark told us that. And it's really good for us. We don't have any of that. And, you know, we might be singing around the house and some songs that we sing here or whatever. But I really like that when Mark said that.
Yeah. And that can be practical if you...
It's good for us.
Yeah. And like I say, different things work for different people, different strokes for different folks, as they used to say. If you turn on the news and you read about in the newspaper shootings, killings, stabbings, and we just started a new war over here, you know, that might give you something interesting to talk about at lunch, but that might not put you in the best frame of mind for worship. So think about what you're doing. Consider that preparation day, even preparation morning. What's going to get us best suited for worship? And it could be something as simple as breakfast. If you are somebody who, you know, we finish up at 11 o'clock, you can probably be at a restaurant by noon. If you're somebody that struggles to, you know, not eat breakfast, but by noon, your stomach is just howling and saying, hey, I need food, 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 food. What might be wise for you?
Breakfast.
Yeah, you know, grab some crackers and eat them in between Bible class and worship. If that's what you need to help you focus on God. So you look for your weak points, you look for the points of distraction, and try to eliminate those or try to reduce those so you can do what Paul said. That it? Okay. Let's talk about the word guilty. The people who do this are guilty of the body and the blood. Definition for that, the person or thing against whom the sin has been committed. In this case, Paul says you're guilty of what? You're guilty of the Lord's...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking body and blood, but again, it does refer to Christ's death. That is, you are disrespecting the sacrifice. The very things that a person has for the forgiveness of sins, those things somebody shows contempt, disdain for, and that, of course, would be the greatest sacrifice that was ever made, and that also angers God. The point's a little similar to Exodus 15 and verse 26. That passage says, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of Jehovah thy God, and will do that which is right in his eyes, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, God said, I will put none of these diseases upon you, which I have put upon the Egyptians. Well, if you were not willing to listen carefully to what God has said, then those diseases were going to come. And that's kind of what you have here as you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 29, and also there in verse 30. The Corinthians were having some serious issues because they had taken the Lord's Supper. They'd combined it with a secular feast of some kind. Verse 21, it was like a social event, maybe some kind of performance to enjoy. They saw it as routine, and that made, as you saw back in verse 20, the worship impossible, and they were guilty of unworthy worship. Christians are priests. Peter talks about that in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 5 and 8. The Hebrew writer said that we've come unto Mount Zion, that heavenly Jerusalem, Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 22, so we need to offer the very best worship that we can, or we risk God's displeasure. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 29 and 31, also I think is helpful. He says this, of how much sore punishment, think ye, shall he be judged worthy, who has trodden underfoot the Son of God, and has counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace. For we know him that said, vengeance belongs to me, I will recompense, and again the Lord shall judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. How do you feel when somebody disrespects our flag? Good or bad? Generally. Bad. And how do people disrespect the flag? All right. All right. If people are going to, you know, stand up for the national anthem, they're out there flying the flag, and people sit down, most of the other people stand up, that is one way to disrespect it. How else do people disrespect the flag? Yeah. That's one of the things that we've seen in our country, especially in recent years. What else might they do?
Kneel.
Hmm?
Kneel.
Well, that wasn't the word that I was thinking, but you're close.
What'd she say?
Kneel. Yeah, I don't know who said that, but they will step on the flag, you know, just walk right over it. Well, you know, if that were a college flag, or if that were the flag for a football team, that probably would not be seen in a positive light. That's especially true for a national flag. You just, for a lot of people, you just don't disrespect the flag. Have people been beaten up or killed because they disrespected somebody?
Sure.
You know, you can imagine walking through, you know, let's say that you've been sentenced for a crime, and you are walking to your prison cell. Maybe you're with some other people, and the guard's walking you back. So as you're walking down the hallway, you got some prisoners over here in their cells. They're watching you, and you know they're hollering and they're screaming and they're, you know, doing all these things. And you start shaking your fist at them, look them in the eye, and disrespect them. What do you think is going to happen to you the first couple days you're in? It's not going to be good, right? You just don't disrespect people, especially in that kind of environment, if you want a farewell. Well, if people get into trouble for disrespecting other people, and if people get into trouble for disrespecting a flag, what happens if you disrespect the elements that God has given to remember his son and the death that he died to forgive all people of their sins? If the lesser brings about some bad consequences, then you would expect the greater is certainly going to bring about some bad consequences. And that's what Paul is trying to convey when he talks about the word guilty. One source worded this way, he says, the magnitude of such a sin is measured by the magnitude of the gift. The penalty is decided by the same measure. God paid attention to the details of the lamb that was to be sacrificed by the Jews under the Old Testament system, so he's certainly going to be paying attention to the Lamb, John chapter 1 and verse 36, who is Christ. A little bit more here, then we'll stop and see if there's anything that you want to add or ask, and then we'll go on to verse 28. The supper is a specific item under consideration in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 27, but again, we want to make sure that we apply that across the board. Other things such as singing, can we sing in an unworthy manner? How could we do that? All right, we could. I'm just not going to participate. And could we excuse that? Could we justify that somehow? People do, don't they?
And then there may be legitimate things like chorus or, you know,
sure,
sickness or something. But a lot of times people will just slam the book and say, you sing about me.
Yeah. Is it possible for a Christian to say, oh, song, we are singing that again. We've sung that 200 times this year. I'm not going to sing that today. That would be bad. But do you think anybody could reason that way? I don't like that song. You think there's anybody who doesn't like some songs in our books?
I do not know the song.
Well, that's, yeah, another consideration, but that does happen from time to time. Or, Brent?
Hey, maybe repetition. I mean, if you're just saying the words that you've memorized and they mean nothing to you as you're singing them, that would be inappropriate, too.
Yeah, that would be. There are a lot of ways. And this is just not with singing, but every element, every aspect of worship we can approach in an unworthy way. What if you have somebody who, for whatever reason, prays in such a way where you almost know the words that are going to come out of his mouth? Do you think you might have a person who prays in public who prays in that way?
Yes.
Do you think that if you have heard that person pray enough, you might think, okay, it's over the joke? I just kind of tune out because, you know, he's going to have his 2 minutes and then we just go on to something else. It is possible to do that. So every facet of worship, every aspect, we have to be so cautious about, because we might do good with one or two or three or four, but it's number five that gets us. Tim?
Well, may have a person that's leading the prayer that maybe they do lead a similar prayer every time they pray, but maybe that's the best they can do. And if we have the attitude of, oh, geez, here we go again.
Yeah.
Then we're in the wrong. You know, this person's trying to do the best they can. God understands that. Why can't we? Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, and it's a completely different context, but remember Matthew 25, Jesus said, when you did it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. So if you, in principle, take that passage from Matthew chapter 25 and see that, that's Jesus up there praying. And boy, I sure dread it when he shows up. That's not something that you really want to have attached to your record. Anybody else? Let's take a look at verse 28. But there's a context, the contrast. But let a man, that will be a Christian, male or woman, but let a man prove himself and let him so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. If the Corinthians were going to avoid the kinds of problems that we talked about, here's a solution. And what's the solution? Paul says you need to do what? You need to prove yourself. What would another word, perhaps a more modern word, be? You need to examine yourself. You need to check yourself out. When you go back and you look at that word, which is translated examine, in classical Greek, it described the testing of metals or the testing of coins. Think about fool's gold. People back in the day thought that they had found gold. They would bring that in to be checked. And if it wasn't genuine, they would say, hey, we've looked at it, we've checked it out, and this is not genuine. So we need to make sure that we are truly trying to worship God. One source said New Testament writers use this word to describe the testing process which salvages the good and discards the useless. Here you see the examination being used in conjunction with the bread and with the fruit of the vine. Paul says, when you have the Lord's Supper, check yourself out. Think about what you're thinking. Once again, easy to see how that applies to the Lord's Supper, but as we're singing, can we, for example, the song leader says, hey, we're going to sing song 192, and we turn over there and think, oh, this is my least favorite song. You know, it's either too slow, too fast. The pitch is always hard to get. This guy never gets it right as far as the pitch, or preacher is speaking. Oh, he's used that verse, you know, already in the sermon, or we've heard that verse 10 times this year. When we have those kinds of thoughts, and we can, I mean, we're human, what might be a good response when those kinds of thoughts, that kind of negative, critical thinking enters into our minds? Yeah, I see a potential problem here, right, with my thinking, so let me kind of put the brakes on, grab that thought, let's put that back where it should be, and say, I need to refocus.
Just examine yourself and say, well, how well could I do if I were in that person's place? Could I do any better?
Yeah, that's another thing that we can do.
Let me cut this person some slack.
Sure. Okay.
I was going to just say what you said, focus.
Okay, very good.
Sometimes I'm able to think about things like that. I, in a way, try to get myself to look at it as if this is the first time I'm going to do it. I mean, if you're in 1 Samuel 27 for 4 Sundays, think of it, you know. What is it? I'm trying to look at it from fresh eyes. You know, my son, Amazing Grace, you know, 50 times in my life. Think about what's going on and as if it's the first time I've seen it.
Yeah. You're putting some effort into it. You might look at a particular text, or you might hear a particular text. You know, for example, there's some subjects I think that most of us are probably fairly well versed on, baptism being one. And you might say, I could have preached that sermon as well as he did. I could have preached it better, 10 times better. And maybe that's true. You might not walk away with anything as far as new information, but you did get some assurance that what you had concluded about that act is correct, and maybe a little bit of a reminder along the way. Never hurts to go ahead and kind of freshen things up. Tied in with that, we can add this point too. You know, sometimes people will complete a project, and after they complete a project, I don't know, Bob, I hate putting you on the spot, but I'm going to do this. So I'm just going to pick on you tonight a little bit. After you complete a job, carpet or tile, do you go back and look at the job?
Sure.
Okay. And, for example, carpet, what are you looking for? Ripples or what?
Make sure it's all tucked in good, cleaned up.
Okay. All right. So I think a lot of people, when they do a job, I mean, if you clean up a kitchen, do you typically just say, well, I got out the dishcloth and I wiped it up and it's all good? People generally look around a little bit, right? Did I miss a spot, or, you know, is that grease all up or whatever that might be? Do you think that we can do the same thing when it comes to worship?
Yes.
We can kind of reflect, and maybe as we're headed out, maybe even after we have finished up an act of worship and we're kind of going on to the next one, have a quick thought there. But we can go back and we can reevaluate our worship that day. I think that would be a new thought for a lot of people, that they have never done that. But we can go back and say, I'll tell you, it's, if you are a preacher, and you know, you're doing this 2 Sundays a week and you're presenting a couple lessons, somebody can say something, hey, you know, that sermon that you preached last week, I guarantee that almost any preacher will have to sometimes say, let's see, what was that? You know, that's awful that you as a preacher can't remember that, at least maybe not right off, but the other person can. But it's easy to go, you know, kind of do something, hear something, and then kind of immediately walk away from it. But you can go back and say, today, or maybe even talk to your spouse about that, or the kids. That would be a great conversation with young people. What'd you think about when it came to the Lord's Supper today? Did you have a problem reflecting on the Lord's Supper? I know you didn't feel well. And that can help us avoid some of the issues that we have here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Anything you want to add or ask? Okay, let's squeeze in a little bit more with the last couple minutes that we have. One source in talking about the word examine said, people must examine their conscience in order not to partake unworthily, and they must discern the true nature of the sacred meal, which is entirely different from an ordinary meal. Now, if you were to look at this as far as how it's expressed in the original tense or text, it is an imperative, and that means that this is a command. When Paul says, examine yourselves, this isn't a suggestion, this isn't a good idea, this is not something that he's just kind of proposing, throwing it out there like, this is probably a pretty good idea to do from time to time. This is a command. This is something that we should do every single week. This is something that we should do on a regular basis. And if we don't do that, then we should expect to be judged and condemned with the world in verse 32. You also would expect this. So as we talk about this a little more as far as an item in class, what would you expect as far as the tense? It's a command, I gave you that much. But would that command be something, you did do this in the past, you are doing this present tense on an ongoing basis, or this is something I want you to do in the future, past, present, future. It is ongoing. And one of the ways that you can do that is, as the service is progressing, to examine yourselves, you know, is my head in the right is my head in the right place? Am I thinking about the right things today? Was I really focusing on that song? Has anybody ever had a situation where you finished a song and, you know, just kind of, what did I sing? I mean, that happens to us from time to time for different reasons. But if that does occur in your life, and assuming that we don't have the other kinds of things that we talked about tonight, that's probably a time to go back and do what Sherman said. You know, go back and say, hey, refocus. You know, my head is just not here for some reason, and let me go back and think about what I'm truly doing so I can truly honor God.